So, good evening, everybody. Let's start with our motivation. And take a moment and really get a sense of how deeply you want to be happy. How that's the major thing motivating everything you do in life. The wish to be happy and to be free of any kind of discomfort or suffering or pain whatsoever. So get in touch with that very vivid feeling inside you that wants that. Think that every living being has that wish for happiness and to avoid suffering that with the same intensity as you do. It doesn't matter who the person is, whether you like them or don't, whether you agree with their opinions or not, they have that same intense wish day and night. And so feel how we and all others are exactly the same in this count. And then bring into vivid recognition in your mind the fact that most sentient beings, in fact, almost all of them, do not know what the causes of happiness are and the causes of suffering. And so even though they want happiness, they're due to the ignorance, not understanding karma and its effects, they mostly create causes for suffering. And even though they don't want suffering, they find it very difficult to create the causes of happiness. First, because they don't really know what they are, and second, because their minds are overwhelmed by afflictions. So bring that into vivid relief in your mind. That fact about almost every living being you come in contact with, and even those you imagine or hear about. And get a sense of what a tragedy that is, that all these living beings, really, they mean well, but because of their ignorance, they act in ways that damage others and bring the opposite of the happiness they really seek. And although we basically are the same as them, we have one small opportunity in that we've heard the teachings, and from time to time we may have some awareness about the functioning of karma and its effects. And so we may try and abide by that law. And feel gratitude for that opportunity and yet don't feel smug about it, because when we look, most of the time, we're acting just as ignorantly as everybody else is. Because we have this small window of opportunity, we have a responsibility, not only to ourselves but to everybody else, to make use of this opportunity, to reverse the way, the distorted way our mind apprehends and conceives of things, to learn what the actual causes of happiness and suffering are. And we have the opportunity to actually create the causes of happiness, abandon the causes of misery, and purify the causes of misery we've already created. So that opportunity is there, something to rejoice about. And at the same time to question ourselves, to inquire within ourselves, how much we take that opportunity and make use of it. So with a feeling of compassion for other living beings and for yourself, really have a strong determination to practice well and to abandon not only this ignorance of karma and its effects, but also the ignorance that makes us, that misapprehends reality. And have the aspiration, therefore, to become a fully awakened Buddha, to make your life meaningful. I think one of the things that can make it easier or more difficult to understand this is how we how we perceive people, what we think people are, what we think the person is. Because when we look around and we see various people, we feel like there's a, you know, you look around at the people in the room and there's real people there, right? Yeah, they all have their own personality, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you look around, this one has this kind of personality, that one has that personality, this one so-and-so, that one so-and-so, and they all appear to us to be very real people, right? I mean, just our usual normal way of apprehending people. And yet, if we think about it for a minute, when we look at a person, all that is really there is just a body and a mind. Yeah? That's all that is really there. It's just a body made of atoms and molecules, and a mind made of moments of clarity and awareness. And that's all. Yeah, there's no personality there. There's no real person there. there's just a combination of body and mind, isn't there? So when you think like that, and then you go back to your usual way of looking at people, how they appear so real, and, oh, I know who that person is and what they're like, and then you go to, but there's just a body and mind, then you see that those two things don't agree, you know? There's something discordant between what is actually there and what we think is there. Because there's nothing personal, or there's nothing that is a person, about either a body or a mind. You know, the body, just all these atoms and molecules, nothing personal about nitrogen and oxygen and carbon, you know, nothing that is a person about the elements or the organs. Similarly, moments of mind, you know, moments of somebody's visual consciousness apprehending orange. Nothing that's a person about that, and nothing that's personal about that. Yeah. Even somebody when they have anger in their mind, you know, it's just that mental factor. There's no real person in there. Or anything personal about my anger versus your anger. Yeah. So there's some kind of dissonance between our usual way of thinking that there's real people, and yet the fact that there's only bodies and minds, and no persons from their own side, no personalities from their own side, you know, no predictable personality out there, no person out there that we can say, oh, I really know how that person works. So, you know, because we usually see people as something real, then we get very tangled up with them, you know. Then they appear either really wonderful or terribly disappointing, or, you know, we see them as a real person and I'm a real person, and so how are the two of us relating to each other? Yeah, everything becomes quite perplexing, doesn't it? Yeah. And yet, all there is on this side is a body and mind, and all there is on that side is a body and mind. And yet we have so many opinions and judgments and emotions about that body and mind out there, or that body and mind in here. Yeah. So you can see, you know, when we think that there's real people there, then it's so easy for attachment and aversion to arise. We compare ourselves to that person, then we think we're better, so we get arrogant. We think we're worse, then we get jealous. We think we're equal, then we compete. You know, we get into so much confusion in our relationships, don't we? Yeah? How am I relating to them? How are they relating to me? Who do they think they are treating me like this? You know, they're wrong, I'm right. How come they don't understand that? They're so stupid. Yeah? So we get into all of that stuff, and yet, actually, none of that is really necessary, is it? Yeah? There's just a body and mind, and the label person, you know? A lightly labeled person that we can't find when we look for it, But that wants happiness not want, and doesn't want suffering. Hmm? So when we, you know, look at what people are in a slightly different way, you know, do a little bit of analysis about what is really there, then it actually becomes easier to have compassion for other people. Because it's not like there's solid personalities there, you know, with concrete resistance, you know, or concrete bad moods that are unbroachable, impenetrable. Yeah. There's just bodies that are constantly changing, minds that are constantly changing. Yeah, everything that's existing dependently on other factors. Yeah. And so that helps our perception. It helps us loosen the rigidity with which we think of other people. And then that in turn opens the mind for some space for compassion. And for much more of an equal compassion, because we're not favoring this one over that one, because they're both body and minds. Yeah? Whereas normally we favor one person over another one, don't we? Yeah? And the person we favor, wow, we will do anything for them. And the person that we don't favor, we will do anything to harm them. Yeah? But when we see them somehow equal in what's really there, it becomes easier to have a more equal compassion for all of them. Mm-hmm. Okay? So on that basis, it helps to generate compassion and to not remain so stuck in our opinions of people, in our expectations of them, in our comparisons of them with us. Okay, so with that extra added space, then it becomes easier to generate bodhicitta. So we've been, we're on chapter 11, right? And we're just starting chapter 11. Yeah, that's for people who are coming for the first time today. We're in the middle of our Yudeva's text called the 400 Stanzas. If you haven't been following it all along, you know, just realize you haven't been following it all along and that you're coming in the middle, and get out of it as much as you can. Okay, so chapter 11 that we're starting on is called The Individual Refutation of Truly Existent Functional Phenomena. And in particular in this chapter, Refuting Truly Existent Time. Okay? So the last two chapters we were refuting truly existent functional phenomena and permanent functional phenomena. And now, you know, we're following along with that, you know, thinking that time, which is a functioning phenomena, you know, time exists, it functions. A functional phenomena, a functional thing, is something that's impermanent, that doesn't stay the same from moment to moment, that's produced by causes and conditions, and itself is a cause for other things. Yeah, so we'll be examining what time is. Okay, so there's certain non-Buddhist schools, you know, from ancient India, that see time as permanent. Does anybody know if there's any scientists that nowadays see time as permanent? Does that kind of thought exist now at all? No. Okay. So these ancient people said, so, okay, there's not a permanent self or soul, Yeah, because such a thing can't be perceived directly through our senses or inferentially through, you know, understood through reasoning. But there still are permanent functional phenomena because there's permanent time. Okay. So those seeds and water and fertilizer are present. Okay. Sprouts and flowers grow at some time, but not at other times. So that indicates that besides the seed and seeds and waters and fertilizers, there's another factor that needs to be there for something to grow, and that factor is time. Okay. So they say, though time is a permanent entity that is different from the functional things that exist in the three times, that exist in the past, present, and future, it's revealed in instants, moments, and brief spans, and so forth. Yeah. It's interesting because we think we understand time, you know. It's like we say, oh, it took an hour to do this, and we all know what that means. Okay? But I remember Kenzer Gyalpa Tepchok in his book, Insight into Emptiness, he asks us to examine what really is an hour. Yeah? What really is an hour? So we say there's 60 minutes in an hour. So is the hour one of the 60 minutes? You know, after 59 minutes have gone by, is the 60th minute the one that is the hour? And when is the hour complete? At the 59th second of the 60th minute? Or at the 60th second of the 60th minute? And is that 60th second of the 60th minute the same thing as the first second of the next hour? Yeah? So, you know, exactly what is the hour and how do we count it? And especially, you know, when they have through, you know, when you travel through different areas in space with different levels of gravity, how time can change. Yeah, so Rip Van Winkle is a possibility. Okay. So, you know, these people assert that there's some kind of permanent or real time that makes, you know, things grow. It's springtime, or now it's summertime, so things grow. Yeah. So, you know, the Madhyamakas reply, if time were a different entity from functional things, it should be perceived. In other words, that there's time over here and then all the things that exist in time over there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's not like that, is it? Okay. And so if you look in verses 207 to 211, you know, we talk some about time in those verses. Okay, so just I want to review the conclusions that we came up with. Yeah. Well, one is that if time is a cause, then it also must be an effect. Because anything that is a cause, yeah, is also an effect, simply because it is impermanent. Again, impermanent meaning changing moment to moment. So you can't have a cause that's permanent and an effect that's impermanent. Or you can't have something that is impermanent when it's the effect, but becomes permanent when it becomes the cause. Yeah? Because things are first effects and then they're causes. Aren't they? Or do you think causes? Usually causes come before effects, right? Yeah? Mm-hmm. But is this counter, first a cause or is it first an effect?
To bring it to fruition. It has to be an effect first.
Yeah, it's first an effect, isn't it? It first has to be something that is produced from other causes. And because it's produced by other causes, then it itself can become a cause for something else. Okay? Mm-hmm. You getting it there?
Mm.
Okay. When a cause changes, it produces an effect that becomes the cause of something else. Okay, so a seed changes, it produces the sprout. The sprout is the effect. Then the sprout becomes the cause of the tree. Okay, so from being an effect, it becomes the cause of something else. And anything that changes is not permanent. Yeah, we talked a lot about this, about how sometimes we feel like, okay, there is something permanent there, but it kind of, part of it changes. You know, like there's a real me that is really me, that is permanently me, and yet, you know, I grow and I change, you know, different things change, but there's something that's still really me that remains the same. So sometimes we have this split mind that something can be both impermanent and permanent at the same time, which is impossible. Okay? So anything that changes is not permanent, and something that can't be both permanent and impermanent. It also can't be neither permanent nor impermanent, because when we have the whole category of existent phenomena, you know, it's subdivided into two, permanent and impermanent. There's no third category. Okay. So is a rabbit's horn permanent or impermanent?
Well, neither. The idea could be permanent, but the rabbit's horn is neither because it's non-existent.
It's non-existent. Okay. Non-existent. Okay? If something were produced, another conclusion we had was if something were produced by a permanent cause, let's say something could be produced by a permanent cause, how could it then become impermanent? Couldn't. You know? So if we think that we have a permanent soul, and yet that permanent soul is going to take rebirth and become another person? Yeah? That's a process of change. Something, a permanent, things produced by a permanent cause, which of course is impossible, can't become impermanent. Because cause and effect have to have the same character, the same nature. They're both impermanent. Okay? Okay, so now we're going to start talking a little bit about the three times, past, present, and future. Yeah. So first of all, in saying that a thing, you often hear, and we talked about this before, that a thing arises, abides, and disintegrates simultaneously. Remember? Mm-hmm. We're saying impermanent things arise, abide, and disintegrate at the same time. That sounds kind of contradictory. How can something arise and also abide and also disintegrate at the same time? That seems contradictory because of our grasping at true existence. But it's helpful here to know what those three things mean. Okay? So arising is it's being the creation of something that didn't exist. Okay? So when the kitten arises, do you remember when you were a kitten? Okay. So when the kitten arises, its arising, or its production, is its being the new creation of what didn't exist before. Yeah, there wasn't a kitten before. There becomes a kitten. Okay. Let's talk about the first moment of the kitten. Yeah, make it more specific. The first moment. When was your first moment of being a kitten? Yeah, what do you think the first moment was? When it was conceived? Yeah, when it was a zygote inside her mama? Is that a kitten? Or did it become a kitten when it was born?
Soon after.
So if it became a kitten when it was born, when it was going through the birth canal, was it a kitten or not? Yeah? And did it become a kitten when... do kittens' heads come out first? They must. Must be like human beings, huh? When its head comes out, is that when it first becomes a kitten? Yeah? Or is it a kitten also before the mama goes into labor? We say she's going to have kittens. Yeah, before she goes into labor, she's going to have kittens. So are there kittens there before she goes into labor? So anyway, try and figure out when the first moment of kitten was. But for argument's sake, let's just assume there's the first moment of kitten, even though we can't point to it. Okay, so that the arising is its being the new creation of what didn't exist. Its abiding is its similarity to what preceded it. Okay, so the second moment of kitten... No, we're talking about the first moment of kitten. Mm-hmm. So in that first moment, there's one factor that is the arising of something that didn't exist before. There's another factor of its being similar to what preceded it in the preceding moment. Yeah, because it isn't like, okay, here's the line when it becomes kitten. And they're two totally unrelated things, kitten and non-kitten. Yeah, the previous moment before that, you know, there's something similar to that. There's continuity going on there. Okay, its aging is its being a different entity from the previous moment. So even though something new has risen, even though that... fact that same moment is similar to what came before it, at the same time it's also different from, it's a different entity than the previous moment. So that's what aging is. And then its ceasing or its disintegrating is the factor of its not lasting another moment. Okay, so at the same time that okay, there's a new creation that wasn't that didn't exist before. There's also the similarity to what did exist before. There's also it being a different identity from what existed before. And there's also it's not enduring for a second moment. And all of that happens at the same time. Okay? Interesting, huh? So the moment in which all of that happens at the same time is called the present. Yeah. That's what the present is. Yeah. And the disintegration of that moment, you know, is a quality that it has at its present time as part of its nature. But after it has disintegrated, that having disintegrated, that exists in the next moment, in the second moment. Okay? So after it's ceasing, then it has ceased. And that having ceased is what we call the Jigpa in Tibetan. And the best translation for it is having ceased or having happened. Somebody translates it as disintegratedness, but that doesn't... I don't think that's a real good translation. There's not a real good translation.
And the Tibetan word is
Jigpa. Z-H-I-G-P-A. Jigpa. Okay. So now we're going to talk about the past, present, and future. Yeah. So we talk about, we use the kitten. Yeah. There's a past kitten, a present kitten, and a future kitten. Which one comes first?
This is the true question.
The present.
The future kitten. Why does the future kitten come first? What's a future kitten?
Non-existent.
Totally non-existent?
Let's say the future's not existent, so the future kitten.
The future is not existent, so tomorrow doesn't exist? Yeah, tomorrow is a totally non-existent phenomena.
Right now, it's not existent.
Yeah. Can something exist but not exist now? Yeah. Does your future Buddhahood exist?
She hopes
yes.
Otherwise, we're weak.
Yeah. If you say, no, my future Buddhahood doesn't exist, then what are you practicing for? I guess you aren't practicing for future Buddhahood, huh?
My present Buddha.
Your present Buddha? Really? You're presently Buddha?
No, but wouldn't that then, isn't the potential there, so isn't that present potential there?
Yeah, but there's a potential, the actual thing. An unlit match has the potential to start a fire, but is it fire?
Not without the proper cause.
Yeah. So you can't say your potential is a Buddha.
Does that fire exist?
Hmm?
The match, does that fire exist?
I'm asking you, does that fire... Is there fire inside that match that exists in an unmanifest way that is just going to come out somehow? Yeah, is there fire inside the match?
No.
The fire might be there in the mind of the person to who the match is a phenomenon.
Pardon me?
The fire might be might exist in the mind of the person observing the match.
You mean there's a heat in their head?
Sorry?
Yeah, so there's fire in their brain?
No, the concept of fire, the label of fire.
Yeah, but the label of fire isn't fire. Yeah.
What is existent?
The label or the concept of fire can't burn you.
Mm-hmm. What is the meaning of exist in this?
Oh, a very good question.
Yes.
What is the meaning of exist? Yeah. Does your past exist? The past is totally non-existent? So that when you apply for a job and you turn in your CV, you're reporting something that's non-existent?
Well, you have to determine what you mean by existence.
Well, I'm asking. What does it mean?
It's something that we make up.
It's something that's happened.
The past is a memory.
It's the having happened.
No. The future isn't a having happened.
No.
Okay. Okay, so like a future pot, what exactly is a future pot? Can you see a future pot? Is there some parallel universe in which, you know, there's a future scene like like what is happening right now,
okay,
going on in a parallel universe, only like 2 days, you know, later, or one day behind, or something like that?
I think it has to relate to causality.
Would that be the present in that universe?
Huh?
Wouldn't that be the present in that future parallel universe?
But wouldn't it be the future of us? I mean, when we talk about a future phenomena, yeah? Does a future phenomena exist?
It's potential.
Yeah? Is it there? Can you see it?
No.
No?
I think future phenomena is a contradiction.
It's a contradiction?
Phenomenon is what appears.
Huh?
Phenomenon is what appears to the mind. Right?
Okay.
So by definition, that could only be present.
So then, but we talk about the future, so doesn't the future exist? We talk about the past, doesn't it exist?
But you could talk about a rabbit's horn as well.
Oh, so there's no difference between a rabbit's horn and the past? When you sent us your resume, yeah, you were talking about rabbit's horns? You were lying to us?
There has to be a difference. And I think it has to relate to causality and functionality. Because, like, a future, some things are non-existent if they're just, like, airy-fairy, like rabbit's horns, but the thing like the match or something that can change and become that, that's its future.
Mm-hmm.
At least a potential future.
What, the present match?
No, the match
is the future?
It has the potential to make fire.
Okay.
Fire is in its future, potentially.
So fire is a future phenomena.
Yeah.
Not only that, except that the matter has to be a present.
Well,
the fire that is being caused by this match,
it's not present at the moment.
It's not present at the moment.
Isn't it?
Is it non-existent?
It is, because it might never exist if that match gets soaking wet and it gets washed away.
That's true. It might never exist.
It's just a possible dependent arising.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So.
Yeah. But by saying the future exists, does that mean the future is predetermined?
No. But we're thinking about the future is we're thinking about possible futures.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the based on possible past moments, and those past moments did like dependently arise in the past, but they no longer presently exist as
mm-hmm.
they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the past exists?
But then the past
no.
would always be here. No, the memory of the past can be brought to the, can arise in the present.
I think you can refer to what doesn't exist. I can refer to a rabbit's hole. I can refer to my past or to my future.
Yeah.
The present and the past sits in our mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Only the present.
Could things change if the past always exists?
And the future come back.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go on. Okay. Okay. So we say that the future happens first in reference to a specific object. Its future happens first, then its present, and then its past. No?
No, it seems like the past already happened, the present is happening, and the future has the potential to happen.
Does... Okay. The... when we're talking about a kitten, which exists first? The future kitten, the present kitten, or the past kitten?
They all exist simultaneously.
The future kitten is first. Yeah.
What do you have first? The future kitten? Or the present kitten or the past kitten? The past kitten has already been born and already ceased. So does the past exist for? Does the past kitten exist first? Because the past has already been born and already ceased. The future kitten hasn't been born and hasn't ceased. Yeah, the present has been born, but hasn't yet ceased. So which of those three come first? It's the future, isn't it? The future kitten comes first, because the future kitten is the one that hasn't yet been born, that hasn't yet arisen. Yeah? Before something can arise, you know, can exist in the present, it has to first, yeah, not yet have arisen. Okay. After it's arisen and it's ceased, then it has arisen and has ceased. Okay. But can we really see a future kitten and a past kitten? Can you touch a future kitten or a past kitten? No, you can only touch a present kitten. Okay.
Parallel question. Difference between non-arisen and non-existent. Is there a difference between non-arisen and non-existent?
Non-arisen and non-ceasing, what do you think?
Non-arisen
and non-existent. Okay. Tomorrow hasn't arisen yet. Is tomorrow non-existent?
Until the end. Until it comes to the end.
Tomorrow exists, doesn't it? We make plans for tomorrow. Don't we?
Yeah.
We have a calendar. You know? We used to have it down here, but we used to... You know, there's a calendar for Friday. Yeah, we talk about Friday. We plan for Friday. It exists.
It exists as a concept, but I guess tomorrow we'll have a whole new concept that we call today.
Okay. There's things that we call, okay, in philosophy, things that we call affirming negations or affirming negatives. An affirming negative is something that eliminates one thing, that's why it's a negative, and at the same time affirms, you know, implies another thing. Okay. The standard example is a hillless plateau. Okay? So a plateau is something that is being affirmed, and it's being hillless is something being negated. Okay? So, a future sprout, okay, eliminates what's being negated, is it eliminates the sprouts having arisen. Because a future sprout hasn't arisen. So a future sprout eliminates the sprouts having arisen and implies that the future sprout is a functioning thing that is the non-completion of the conditions for its arising.
You said that again.
Yes.
Okay. Given... Okay, there's another clause here that's very important.
You have to repeat this verse.
Given that the causes for its arising exist.
Yeah.
That's important. Okay. Okay. So the future sprout, for example, eliminates the sprouts having arisen, because it's future, it hasn't yet come into being. And it implies, by saying future sprout, it implies that the sprout is a functioning thing, which means it's an impermanent thing, okay? That is, it's a functioning thing. The future sprout is a functioning thing. It's something that exists, okay? But it's the non-completion of the conditions for its arising, given that the causes for its arising exist. Okay? So what's being negated? Because remember, we're saying the term affirmative negative, sometimes they say implicative negative. What's being negated is the sprouts having already, arisen. And what's being affirmed is that the future sprout is a functioning thing. Yeah? That isn't there at the moment because all the causes and conditions necessary for its arising have not come together yet. However, those causes and conditions exist. Yeah. Because if you don't have that last clause, then it would include rabbit's horns. Because all the causes and conditions for rabbit's horns haven't come to exist. Yeah. But we can't say a rabbit's horn is a future phenomena because it's totally non-existent. Okay. Because there's no causes for a rabbit's horn. So if there's no causes for it, you can't have the non-completion or the not coming together of all the causes. Okay? So that's what the future is, yeah? The present sprout, maybe we should go to the past. Let's skip the present for a minute. So the past sprout also is an affirming negative, yeah? And what it eliminates, what it's negating, is a sprout not having disintegrated. Okay? So it eliminates a sprout not having disintegrated because the sprout has disintegrated. Right? Mm-hmm. So that...
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, at first it sounds funny. So what's being negated is a sprout not having disintegrated because in the past sprout, the sprout has disintegrated. And it implies or it affirms that the disintegration of the sprout occurs in dependence on the sprout. Okay? So the disintegration of the sprout occurs in dependence on the sprout. Okay? So the past sprout is the having ceased of the sprout. It's the jigpa of the sprout. Yeah? Is a past sprout a sprout? No, it's not, is it? Is a future sprout a sprout? No. Is a future sprout a functioning thing?
Yes.
Yes, but it's not a sprout. Yeah. It's not that there's some mysterious kind of sprout somewhere floating around that is going to suddenly pop into the present because until now it's been existing in a parallel universe, you know? And, you know, we all grew up with talk of time machines, you know, time travel, going into the past, going into the future. Do you think that's really possible? Yeah? Because it always showed on the sci-fi movies, kind of like the past was already happening. Yeah. But it's already happening, but it's in the present. That can't be. And the future can't already be happening, because that would make it in the present. Okay? So the past and future things are non-affirming negatives. Okay? Yeah. So don't think of them as positive phenomena, because, you know...
Are they are they affirming negatives?
They're affirming negatives. Thank you. Yeah. Okay, so past and future things are affirming negatives.
The future sprout might never sprout. Someone might pour boiling water.
Pardon?
A future sprout may never sprout.
Yeah, a future sprout.
It has the potential to sprout.
Yeah, a future sprout, you know, it isn't a present sprout. It's not actually a sprout because then it would be present. Yeah. A future sprout exists because all the causes for it exist. They just haven't come together. But the future is not predetermined because, as you say, something could happen to one of the conditions so that the future sprout never becomes a present sprout.
I have difficulty to understand that it exists.
The future sprout exists, but remember, a future sprout is not a sprout.
Okay, the future sprout is not a sprout.
It's not
the
a sprout.
Future sprout exists.
It's yes. Yeah. Because if the future sprout were a sprout, it would have already attained the entity of being a sprout, and we'd be able to see it.
But why does it exist?
It exists as a future sprout.
Yeah. There's a future sprout. Tomorrow's sprout exists. Okay. Even though it hasn't already arisen, even though it hasn't come into existence
so
in the present moment.
So why do we call it exists? Why do we name it this way?
It exists because it's something that is. It's not non-existent. If the future were non-existent, then we couldn't make plans for it.
Or have the present with the past.
Okay. So the future exists, but it doesn't exist now. Okay. Or we could say the future is. It might be easier to say the future is, but it doesn't exist now. Okay, the past is, because the past isn't non-existent, but the past doesn't exist now.
Are these objects?
Huh?
Are these all objects?
Objects. What's the definition of an object?
I have to go get my book.
What's a synonym of an object? Of object?
Jewel. No, object, right?
An object is a synonym is existent.
Yeah.
So are we using the definition that it can be cognized by the mind and the functions?
Yeah.
Right. So
something that can be cognized.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
By a valid, reliable cognizer, not by an unreliable cognizer. Yeah, because rabbit's horns can be cognized by unreliable cognizers.
Can I ask another question about
this?
So why in this, when you say the past sprout is an affirming negative, why would it be wrong to say an affirming negation? Why do they make a... careful to say
sometimes that? Negative or negation, I don't know that they make a big difference between the two.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, to be continued next week. Does next week exist?
Yes.
Does it exist now?
No.
It's amazing. This is how the whole stock market functions, doesn't it? People are putting down money on these not future potentials of. I mean, it functions like the future of your stock that is not existed now, but people put a lot of money on
exactly.
it, expecting it to function a certain way.
Yeah.
And your whole mood, life can revolve
yeah.
around this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very, very good point, you know, that when you play the stock market, yeah, what you're playing on is the future of a company.
Any betting game, horse racing, car,
yeah.
any betting game.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So it must exist.
You're looking at where you think those causes and conditions
are. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Right. So you know, if you play the market wisely, then you can see the different causes and conditions and what's likely to happen. Yeah. But if you miss a cause or a condition, then maybe what was set up to, originally going to happen may turn out differently. Well, will turn out differently. Yeah. There goes another expectation down the drain.
And this is true for any planning that we do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, any planning that we do. That's why I say as soon as we have a plan, we know what isn't going to happen. Yeah? Because there's always causes and conditions, you know, things that come up that our mind is too limited to be aware of. And because things change so much, you know, and are in constant flux.
It's been about 2 years, a comment.
Yes.
She's tuning in, and she says, how does the future sprout exist? That's important. I guess emphasizing the how. It's just a conceptual object.
It's just a conceptual object?
Mm-hmm.
It's a conceptual appearance? Conceptual appearances are permanent. And a future sprout is a functioning thing, meaning it's impermanent. If the future sprout were just a conceptual appearance, it could never arise because it would be permanent. So what consciousness perceives a future sprout? Does your eye consciousness see the future sprout? No. What consciousness is it? It's got to be a mental consciousness. The future sprout isn't conceptual, but maybe we know it by means of concept. If we had really purified minds, we might know it directly.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like the Buddha's mind sees everything, past, present, and future, directly.
Mm-hmm.
What is the difference between the seed and the future sprout?
Oh, the difference between... That's a very good question. What's the difference between a seed and a future sprout?
The seed is the present seed, and the future sprout is its potential.
Yeah. The present seed has already arisen. The future sprout has not yet arisen.
But yet the present seed could be is part of the causes of the future sprout.
Yeah. The present seed is part of the causes of the future sprout.
So the future sprout is what the seed may or may not someday become.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the seed would be the substantial cause.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Future sprout.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The thing that turns into...
I don't know if it would be the substantial cause of the future sprout. I'll have to think about that one.
Okay.
Yeah, it must be. It must be the substantial cause of the future sprout. But... the seed is a positive phenomena, and the future sprout is a affirming negation. Yeah, because the seed exists. The seed exists at the same time as the future. If the seed exists at the same time as the future sprout, then it can't be the cause of the future sprout. because cause and effect don't exist simultaneously.
So isn't it the disintegration of the seed that causes the future sprout?
The disintegration.
Of the seed is causing the future sprout.
Right, you have to have the disintegrating of the seed
is a substantial and the cause.
And the arising of the sprout happen at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
So is the disintegration of the seed the substantive cause of the sprout, the future sprout?
We usually say the seed is the substantial cause of the sprout.
Which makes me think that the future sprout doesn't exist until the future, because how can it and its substantial cause exist at the same time?
Yeah, this is. Let me check on that. How they say it? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because cause and effect can't exist at the same time. So the disintegrating of the seed exists at the same time as the arising of the sprout. The disintegrating of the seed happens at the time of the seed. The arising of the sprout does not happen at the time of the sprout.
Also, isn't there a thing where...
Because you don't have a sprout that is arising. So the arising of the sprout does not happen at the time of the sprout.
So sprout and seed can never exist at the same time.
Yeah. Okay, let's offer the mandala.
So we're on the laminated sheet on that back page.
It will continue to think about this.
Joshua Cutler wrote a bunch of comments too.
Oh yes. What does Josh say?
So, from Nagarjuna's fundamental treatise on the middle way, whatever is dependently arisen, that is explained to be emptiness, that being a dependent designation is itself the middle way. Mm-hmm. It is something that is not dependently arisen, such a thing does not exist, therefore something that is non-empty does not exist.
Yeah. Did you get that? Okay. Yeah, what he quoted is a very famous verse in Nagarjuna.
May the spiritual teacher soon lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Lobsang's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase. Idam Gurana Mandala Kandiryatayami.
Due to this merit,
may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chinrezi, may you stay until samsara ends.
May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions,
and especially at Shravasti Abbey in the West. Flourish.